sitting in for Earl Ingram, and I want to thank Earl for giving me the opportunity to fill in for him. He's been a great mentor. Radio, I've always been intrigued by radio, and indicated to him I had an interest in this thing, and so he said, well, why don't you come on in, and I'll show you around, and Kira will show you how the controls work, and then one day you can fill in for me. I said, really? Wow, you really mean that? And he really did.
Yeah.
Good afternoon to the listeners. We got a great show today, a lot to talk about. Kira, turn that up a little bit. I like that. You know, maybe we'll just skip the all the talk and just listen to music for the next 3 hours. I don't know if that would go over big, but what do you think?
I don't know, but it's good rush hour music. Absolutely.
Great time of day. Anyway, today we're going to talk about a number of things. We're going to start out with education. And that should be no surprise to the listeners. I have a real interest in education because of the importance that it plays in the role of developing young people. It has always been the traditional vehicle to upward mobility in the United States, and our K-12 education system all across the country, it's experiencing some problems, and the system here in Milwaukee and MPS, I'm not going to spend the next half hour bashing MPS, we've done enough of that, but I want to talk about some aspects, some angles that we don't really talk about as it relates to MPS. And once again, the Journal Sentinel has started a series on education and some educational reform. There was an article Sunday that I read relative to parental involvement, how to engage parents in the education of their children. There were some striking things to me anyway, observations made by this group that put together this series here, some findings that they discovered. I was a little puzzled by some of them, and it just seemed like some of the officials at MPS and the administration were clueless about some of the things related to parental involvement. I mean, we all know, we've talked about it, that the important role that parents play in the education of their children. I've always said, if the parents don't care, the kids won't care. And how do we engage parents to get more involved, to get more active in the school, to get more active after school, because the school day can't just end at the end of the school day. There's some work that has to be done at home. We refer to it as homework. And, you know, it's one of those sensitive things. I want to read a little bit from this article. For decades, national studies have linked high parental engagement with the higher rates of student achievement and interest in school. Yet attention on home life issues and parental involvement have languished in the field of American education reform. And I find that rather disturbing. And also it says here that the roadblocks to helping parents are numerous. It's hard to identify the best or right way for parents to be involved. Results of parental engagement are hard to measure. Teachers are not trained to help parents, and the responsibilities of doing so often are seen as falling outside of their job description. And that's, wow. How can it be outside the job of a teacher's job description to help parents in this process? You know, those parents that do come forward. And there are a lot of parents that are engaged in our community in the education of their children. They need help. They seek help. And oftentimes, according to this article anyway, they find that the help's not there. It's lacking. And so now there's some federal money involved, $4 million in federal stimulus money over 2 years to expand a major parental involvement program to 35 schools. The article goes on to say, but MPS has a spotty record, long operating a splintered outreach program that makes it easy to catch the same parent repeatedly and miss the vast majority that need assistance. One of the shortcomings that was cited as well was data collection and oversight. MPS has no data on district-wide or school-by-school parent-teacher conference attendance, and it doesn't know what schools have parent-teacher organizations or parent involvement coordinators. And again, when I read that, I said, wow. Also, as it relates to technology to reach parents, only about 12% of MPS households in 08-09 had a parent assist account, which allows parents to monitor their children's attendance and grades online. And by comparison, 98% of parents of high school students in the Franklin Public School District logged into a similar system within the past year. Goes on to say that leaders in the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association say the administration has never tried to engage the union at the bargaining table on the issue. I personally, I don't see this as a bargaining issue, but that's the bureaucracy that exists, not just at MPS, but in many K-12 public education systems across America. And, you know, this is one of the things that I found interesting with the announcement of Governor Doyle and Mayor Tom Barrett that they were seeking a governance switch, and they wanted the mayor to have total control over MPS, including the selection of the superintendent and so on and so forth. And, you know, I found that kind of interesting, the way they rolled it out. There was no civic input. I don't feel that they did their laying the foundation. I don't think they laid a very good foundation in getting the many partners in this thing, the many people and entities that have an interest in it and actually have a say in it. I don't believe that there's any political support for this to happen. I was reading an article the other day where several members of the Common Council said they're not for this. I know there are members of the state legislature that are unsure about such a drastic move. And I know that there's no political support in Madison or in Milwaukee, and there for sure is not any public support for this. We've had several community meetings and debates and discussion on this, and the poll numbers show it's not there. I haven't really come to a conclusion. I don't think it matters what I feel on the issue, but I have looked at this thing, and in terms of a governance structure, I have done a lot of reading on it, not just because of this, that this thing was mentioned, but I know that this is one of the reform models that's been out there. I think 1992 was the first time a mayor took over a entire public school system in the United States once again. And there are many people who may not realize that this is nothing new, that when school districts were first started in the United States, mayors ran the school system. And in fact, what led to the creation of school boards was the fact that mayors were using school systems for political gain. There was corruption going on, and that led to the rise of elected school boards from different districts to kind of break this thing up and eliminate some of the corruption that was going on when mayors were in control. So I kind of look at this thing as not anything new, but kind of going back to the future. And there's another aspect of this that I want to talk about as well, and it'll lead into the next thing, and that's the issue of how we view education in the city of Milwaukee, and specifically in the black community. And I know that the overwhelming amount of parents are engaged, they're involved. We have a strong school choice program with a waiting list, which tells me there are parents who realize that it is their responsibility, and they want more say over the direction of the education of their children. They can't get in. We have a strong charter system here in the city of Milwaukee. I know that the Obama White House is real big, as is Education Secretary Duncan, on expanding charter schools, making it easier to establish a charter school, not having so many hoops to jump through. And that's part of this race to the top, too, or as well, I should say, that in order to qualify for some of this money that's out there, you have to show some reform efforts. And right away in Milwaukee, we jumped to the mayoral control and didn't look at some of these other underlying issues like the achievement gap. Let's not kid ourselves. A change in governance structure is not going to improve the achievement gap. It's not going to improve things like how do we engage parents. It's not going to improve teacher quality. Those things were glossed over or glanced over in favor of this huge policy shift without a lot of civic input, as I indicated. And that's a dangerous thing. But also there's another aspect of this that I know there's no doubt in my mind that many of the listeners have heard about before, and it may be a small section of the community, but at the same time, it does exist among young people that education is a white thing, that education, that those students, particularly black students that engage in education and study and are scholastically inclined and involved, get teased by their peer group that you're acting white or education's a white thing. And it causes a lot of individuals to hold back. It's peer pressure. We all understand when you're at an impressionable age the role that peer pressure can play in a person's life. And I'm going to read from something in a little bit that has an example of that sort of peer pressure that exists. And I guess the question I would have, you know, 799-1290 is the call, if you, the number if you want to get in on this. What do we have to do to break down that sort of peer pressure with our young people and continue to encourage them that, no, it's not a white thing? I mean, personally, I'm insulted when people refer to education as a white thing, or that you're acting white if you're scholastically inclined. They don't corner the market on education. Our community, going back to the beginning of this country, I mean, it was one time it was against the law to educate blacks. We had a penchant for education. We understood. I mean, we had limitations, obviously, with segregated schools and things like that. But at the same time, you know, some of the pioneers, you know, people like Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, all had a strong inclination toward education. So I think it's a myth that education is a white thing. But, you know, young people being what they are will engage in that sort of banter. And it does have an effect on many black students who want to do well in school, have the ability, but yet the peer pressure holds them back. I'm reading an article here from the a columnist out of the New York Times, and it's entitled, "You Act White, Coping in a Black World." Carolyn Gingery had been warned, but she was still surprised and hurt when some of her lifelong friends turned on her the way that they did. Gingery is a 22-year-old black woman from Washington, D.C., who went off to college a few years ago. One of the connections I had with my friends back home was that we always had been sort of aspiring hip-hop artists and things like that, she said. But we were young, you know, and I eventually woke up from La La Land and realized that I would have to get an education and a job, something a little more concrete than fantasies about the hip-hop underground. She noticed that when she came home from school on visits, some of her friends treated her differently. I don't know if it was out of jealousy or resentment or whatever, she said, but they would actually say to me, "You're acting white. You're acting white now," they'd say. They'd say, "You act white or you act proper." Gingery had come face to face with the dilemma that many young black black youngsters encounter as they try to improve their lives by studying, going to college, and making other efforts to escape the swarming tentacles of poverty and ignorance. Old friends and sometimes even relatives may see those courageous efforts as threats and react bitterly. "I knew that it would happen because other friends had told me it would happen," said Gingery, "but I was surprised that it would happen with friends that I was so close to, people I had grown up with from time to time. I was maybe 6 or 7. I actually ended friendships because of comments like that. We just couldn't connect anymore because it was just really a negative situation. I have no idea what the stats are, but I know that this perverse peer pressure to do less than your best in scholarly and intellectual pursuits is holding back large numbers of black Americans, especially black boys and men. The other day I had a long conversation with a 15-year-old named David Blocker, who happens to be from Washington. Until January, when he was expelled, David was a student at the Hyde Leadership Public Charter School. We were so lackadaisical," he said. "Our third grade school was failing 3 or more classes. The pressure from my friends was mostly to chill and, like, you know, do what you want to do. People were not doing their homework, just coming to school. David said he went right along with the crowd. It's hard to come in and really work when somebody's just chilling and playing around." And he goes on to say, "I guess I'm responsive to how my environment is." And that's the aspect that I talk about in terms of the peer pressure that we put on young people. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. We're going to go to break and come back and continue with this aspect.
You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Now back to the Evening Rush with Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Welcome back to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. David Clark in for Earl Ingram and the Evening Rush. And we're talking about education, first and foremost. Oftentimes in my mind, because of the important role it's going to play in putting this city back together, we understand the job situation, and you can't go anywhere without finding people who are out of work and in need of some sort of way to raise their family, keep their family together, pay the bills, so on and so forth. And it starts with education. The economy has shifted, as we all know, and we're going to talk about what the city needs to do to improve the job market, and extends from this education discussion that we're having. And what we talked about before the break was the role that parental involvement plays. What do we need to do to improve parental involvement? How do we get parents engaged in the process? Our phone lines are open at 799-1290 if you want to get in on this conversation. And then there's this aspect with our young people, this dynamic that among their peers anyway, there's a segment of young people that see education as a white thing, and they tease their counterparts about it, and peer pressure being what it is, sometimes it will cause young people to withdraw from education, to fit in. These kids are talented. They have the ability. They've proved it. And but, you know, you make some questionable decisions early in life in adolescence, and a peer pressure and involvement or acceptance is more important than some of these other things. But, you know, we got to do something to change that dynamic with our young people, because if they're going to compete for jobs in the 21st century, obviously, with the fastest growing job sectors in the United States, it's going to require a higher level of education. And in the 4 o'clock hour, that'll lead into a guest that I'm going to have on. It's an author. He's a writer. He's an actor. He's a husband and a father. He's Joseph Phillips, who wrote a book, and it's entitled You Talk Like a White Boy. It's about family, faith, authenticity, politics. And he's going to share some of his experiences with us along these same lines. Some of the peer pressure that he dealt with growing up in the city of Denver, Colorado. But I want to get back to this parental involvement thing and what we need to do to improve parental involvement. As I said, if the parents don't care, the kids won't care. And MPS seems to be on this mission. They've been given $4 million to put together a strategy to improve parental involvement. My fear is that it'll get lost in the bureaucracy. That same report Sunday talked about how the money that had been allocated for this sort of thing previously didn't really reach where it was intended to go. Because under the No Child Left Behind Act, it requires states, districts, and schools to develop and implement plans to reach all families, especially low-income families that are attending school, which makes up the majority of MPS. And while the districts face sanctions if the schools fail to make adequate yearly progress, very few schools face any consequences, according to this article. And Title I says that you have to spend a certain percentage of this money that's allocated for family engagement, family involvement. And MPS received $36 million for such a program in 2008 and 2009. And it says, however, that the money has not always been spent on academic-oriented programs, and that's why I have the fear that I have in terms of allowing this huge bureaucracy to draw up this program. So the answer to this dilemma has to come from the community, and there has to be civic involvement and civic engagement, discussion, talk. How are we going to do this? How are we going to improve parental involvement so that our kids realize that, hey, you know, this is expected of me, and I have the ability, and for parents to stress to these kids, you have the ability, and you have to go out there, and you have to do this. So let's go to the phones. Thelma, welcome to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. Your question or comment, please.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, our Sheriff Clark.
Sure.
Well, yes, I want to make a few comments. First, I want to read something very quickly to you, okay?
Okay, ma'am.
This was to my daughter. Her name is Edwinique.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Edwinique, I won't read all of it. You were nominated for this award by your training director. The UC Berkeley Spot Award recognizes your exemplary achievement in demonstrating the behaviors and values that are important at UC Berkeley. You will receive your award of $400 and an upcoming check or pay voucher. Your contribution helped UC Berkeley maintain its position as a leading institution of higher education. Thanks for a job well done. Congratulations. She got that March 1709 this past year, right? Yeah. Anyhow, my daughter now, she said she said the University of Michigan, and she's our counseling psychology, and she got her degree from UW-Madison. So anyhow, what I'll say, it's not a white thing. Education is for everybody, and we should not even listen to people when they say it's a white thing. And I feel that a child, when they are 4 and 5 years old, should be able to read. And also, if we develop our spirituality and our physical and fitness life and our social and mental life, we'll do very well. And as you said, Sheriff, that we have to expect more of our young people. They can do much better. They can do much better. So I just thought I would share that with you.
All right, I appreciate it. Very well said, and that's proof positive of the role that encouragement, parental involvement, engagement plays in the fact that our young people will respond. If we challenge them, they'll respond. And UC Berkeley, outstanding school, and the University of Michigan, this is what our young people are capable of. There's a large segment, though, that is underperforming and underachieving, and I think it's just terrible, because I don't know how you're going to compete in the 21st century. And I know it's a struggle sometimes. There's just no doubt about that. And parents are doing sometimes the best they can. But, you know, the fact is that sometimes fall a little short. But we can't let anybody slip through the net, so to speak, and fall into this vicious cycle of poverty and unemployment, and then that leads to lives of crime, so on and so forth. And there's a nexus to this that everybody understands. So thank you for your thoughts. And this is what we need more of, and this is what I want to hear more about. I think what we'll do is we'll go to a break, and it is 3:34, 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
If you look in any phone book, you can find hundreds of attorneys who can advise you. But what you want is the best advice. Make the logical choice when you need sound advice and legal representation. The only choice is Samster, Conkle, and Safran. They'll be at your side every step of the way. If you've been in a car accident or have taken a serious fall, call the experts. Samster, Conkle, and Safran. If you have any questions about medical malpractice, workers' compensation, employment discrimination, or civil rights abuse, call the experts. Samster, Conkle, and Safran. A lot of attorneys claim they will be there every step of the way, but you know, Samster, Conkle, and Safran will. Throw away the phone book. Forget the Hollywood TV ads. Call the experts. Samster, Conkle, and Safran today. 224-0400. That's 224-0400. Don't make a huge mistake by calling the wrong attorney. Call Samster, Conkle, and Safran, the expert attorney team you can trust.
What is your child's morning routine? Does he get up early, eat breakfast, and get to school on time? We at Milwaukee Public Schools know that a child's successful education starts with consistent attendance at school. Students with good attendance perform better, achieve, and develop the confidence for success at school and in life. We're MPS, committed to working with families to encourage consistent attendance in school.
Hi, I'm Mr. Zizzo, enrollment coordinator of the soon-to-be Morris.Marshall, the next level of gifted and talented education. Secure your seat for fall 2010 as we expand our program as the only school at our beautiful new Morris.Marshall campus. Apply now for grades 6, 9, and 10. Call 414-616-5826 for information. Morris.Marshall, school for the gifted and talented. Get Morris coded for success.
There's never been a better time to find the home of your dreams. The National Association of Realtors wants you to know the Home Buyer Tax Credit has been extended and expanded. Current homeowners can receive a $6,500 tax credit. First-time buyers are still eligible to receive an $8,000 credit. The opportunity of a lifetime ends April 30th. Talk to a realtor for qualification details or visit houselogic.com/homebuyertaxcredit. Every market's different. Call a realtor today. Income qualification applies. Only realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Recalculating route.
What's up with this GPS?
You need to finish your holiday shopping.
Right. I doubt Michelle would want another spice rack.
Chase Freedom gives you 3% cash back.
I can get Michelle that new camera. Plus, 3% cash back for me. Hey, how do you know so much?
My brother's a Chase ATM.
Chase Freedom gives you 3% cash back at computer and electronic stores, discount stores, and bookstores. Just sign up at chase.com/freedom. Chase, what matters.
Chase cards issued by Chase Bank USA NA and are subject to credit approval. Restrictions apply.
If your tailpipe is dragging or your car is loud, there's one man that can help you solve your problem. The Muffler Man at Kern's Muffler Shop.
The Muffler Man at Kern's Muffler Shop can get your muffler and tailpipe fixed right in 30 minutes or less. Visit the Muffler Man at Kern's Muffler Shop. They have mufflers with lifetime warranties.
Make sure you see the Muffler Man today at Kern's Muffler Shop on 21st and Hampton. The Muffler Man.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. The Evening Rush on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Welcome back. David Clark in for Earl Ingram. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town and the Evening Rush. We're talking about education, parental involvement. And on the heels of that last call, I want to share with you a letter that was written. This is several years ago, but it's by a woman, a single mother. And it was written to the a newspaper in Los Angeles when they were having their reform issues themselves with public education. And she writes the following: I disagree with the July 5th opinion piece, which was entitled, Finally, a Los Angeles United School District Plan to Help Black Children. And then this is back to her. She says, we black folks are always passing the buck and looking for someone or something to help us out of the miry clay. Black children are at the bottom of the totem pole in public schools. We should not blame the schools for the failure of our offspring. I'm a single parent with a full-time job. Nevertheless, every day for 1 hour, I sit with my four-year-old to do phonics, simple math, spelling, critical thinking, art, coloring, perception, and watching educational videos. On weekends, I take her to the library or to the California Science Center where she sees chickens being hatched and the heartbeat of an elephant. I take her to parks that have ducks and other educational aspects. I read to her. I read books to her at least 3 times a week, and I point my finger at every word that I read to her. I tell her that learning is fun, and reading and books are great. And now she enjoys creating her own stories. She is motivated and excited about learning as she explores the world around us. My child was psychologically tested 1 week after her 4th birthday, and the results indicated that she scored between 1st and 3rd grade levels in the superior range in reading, math, and written language skills. It's about time we take responsibility for our own problems and stop looking for others to help. There are times when I don't physically feel like working with my child or reading to her, but she is my responsibility, not the school's. If we send our children to school unprepared, the schools are not going to work with them or give them individual attention. Instead, they're going to place them in special ed classes and label them as learning disabled. I'm tired of hearing that standards for black folks have to be lowered and that we need a plan to help us. We need to help ourselves. There are too many black kids who come to school with little or no interest in learning. It is not the teacher's responsibility to motivate them. We as parents need to get off our butts, get off the internet, get off the cell phone, and take time for our children. And if we don't have the time, we need to make the time. When my child is old enough to attend grade school, she's attending a private, predominantly white school that costs about $12,000 a year. Why? I want her in a school where being black does not mean you need extra help. I refuse to put her in a school where she is an exception to the rule. I want her to attend school where she is expected to achieve. I want her to be challenged and not hindered. And that's the kind of spirit that I know exists out there with many parents. And she was able to articulate that wonderfully. I thought that was profound when I read that letter. And I said, this is what exists out there. This is what many parents are doing. They've taken the bull by the horn, so to speak, and realize the parental involvement is huge, and it doesn't just end with the school. I talked about that earlier, how, you know, we can't view this as something that ends at the learning ends at the end of the school day. Our phone lines are open, 799-1290. It's the number if you want to get in on this conversation. And there was another aspect that she talked about that I want to address for a couple minutes here, and it's the lowering of standards. And there's a study out that is showing that states are lowering their standards for academic proficiency in recent years, and that nearly all of the exams used to test kids are falling short of the federal testing benchmarks, according to this new study. And the research was issued by the United States Department of Education, and it's calling into question the rigor of tests that states select to comply with the student improvement mandates under the No Child Left Behind Act. And this woman in this letter from L.A., she touched on that. You know, we're lowering standards to get people over the bar. Our kids are smarter than this. Our kids are, they're better than this. They deserve more than this from a school system. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm questioning in terms of parents being not engaged and allowing this big bureaucratic institution to have as much control as they do over our education system. It's why I bring into question the shifting of policy and letting the mayor have total control. Again, I want to indicate that I'm not totally against that sort of thing. I'm just saying that I think the jury's out a little bit here, and more time needs to be given before we delve into such a move. I don't want to get to a situation where we can't turn back, that we've gone too far. It's a lot when you talk about a public policy initiative of this magnitude, but things like closing the achievement gap, school attendance, parental involvement, math scores, reading scores, those things aren't being talked about under this plan. It's being made to seem like just selecting the school superintendent is a magic pill, and it's what's going to turn this whole thing around when it's not. Let's go back to the phones. Olivia, welcome to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. Your comment or question, please.
Hi, I have a comment and observation. I caught the end of your letter. I'm a school counselor at a suburban high school, and I've been a school counselor for 20 years, and my daughter attends a Milwaukee public school. She's in third grade, and every evening we spend a couple of hours doing reading and math, and I'm making up things for her to do that when she finishes her homework so that I can supplement what she's doing educationally so that she does very well in school. And I find it unfortunate when we have parents of color who don't think that they can send their children to Milwaukee public schools because they feel the need to spend a lot more money sending their children to private parochial schools that are predominantly Caucasian, and I've been working in a suburban school for almost 17 years, and I'm telling you, there are problems in the community wherever your child is at, whether it's a Milwaukee public school or a suburban school. Color doesn't have anything to do with it. It's more of a social economic issue. And the other thing that I wanted to just say, living in Milwaukee, I'm a Milwaukee resident, is that we have all of these people who are so down on Milwaukee who don't support Milwaukee Public Schools, who don't believe in Milwaukee Public Schools. And, you know, it would be unfortunate for our city to shut down because we have one of the best theater programs. We have one of the best zoos in the nation. We have one of the best public museums. We have great libraries here. And if people don't support Milwaukee and they don't send their children to Milwaukee Public Schools, it's unfortunate for us as a city because the whole city will collapse. And I wanted to just make an observation that it's unfortunate when parents feel that the only education is suburban education or a private white education. And I think that's untrue. And like I said, I've been working at a suburban school for almost 17 years. And I'm telling you, a lot of the children who have difficulties aren't necessarily the Milwaukee Public School children. It's the residents who live in that district who are Caucasian. So I just wanted to make that observation that we need to support Milwaukee Public Schools. We need to believe in it. We need to help educate our children. We need to take an active role as parents to support what they're doing in the system. That was my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your comments. Well said. Schools often determine, or a school system will determine, where people want to live. And you're right. If we don't get this thing fixed, and if we don't get it fixed soon, you'll see people making decisions on whether or not they're going to stick around the city. They make decisions on whether or not, you know, they want to be involved in this school system with their kids. And that's an extra burden when you can't take advantage of the public school system in your community and you have to send kids, or you feel that way anyway. And some of this might be based on the unknown or some misperceptions. But at the same time, you can't argue with the data. When you look at the reading scores, you look at the math scores, and some of those things, you know, the data tells a compelling story. For one, I think they need to strengthen the curriculum to challenge our kids more. I think our kids will reach that bar if we set it high. Sure, it'll be a struggle for some kids. There's no doubt about that. I believe that large urban school districts as a model no longer work. So, you know, I think some discussion needs to take place about, you know, and we need to get away from all this, who's going to govern it, and talk about, you know, what model we want to use to strengthen curriculums. What do we want this large urban school district? Do we want to break it up into smaller parts? And again, I'm just throwing these out there for debate and discussion. And we need the collective energy of everybody in this city, the business community, parents, teachers, and everybody involved to turn this thing around. But right now it seems to be a one-sided push with the school governance, and I think that's a detriment to some of the effort that has gone on, some of the effort that might go on. This school system does have its problems. I'm not going to deny that. If some people want to be in denial of that, that's, you know, for you to decide. But, you know, we can't just take in one fell swoop and with a public policy shift that, I'll tell you, it's important. And if you make a mistake on it, you're only going to get one chance at it. Let's go back to the phone. Sean. Sean, welcome to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. Your comment or question, please.
Yes, sir. I just came up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, about 6 months ago. I came up from Mississippi. And I have to say that the education system down there versus up here publicly is pretty much equal. And how I know about that is because as a recruiter for the military, test these students out, and I've been recruiting for a while, and the same results come about between the Milwaukee versus the Mississippi standard. Also, the education system in the colleges down in Mississippi has lowered their standard to the standard of the kids who are not learning. And I'll give you an example. Two of the major universities do not take ACT testing because a lot of high school students cannot pass the ACT according to their standards. So instead of keeping that standard of ACT, they've taken it away and put placement testing like our two-year colleges are doing. And so with that in mind, the colleges are having to deal with, you know, the lack of education with their students. Then 50% already are dropping out because of the lack of the money and the ability to finish. And so I just have to say that we have to go back to the parents. ultimately, it is the parent's responsibility to take care of that child of theirs. We cannot put the burden on the education system. We provide a service, or they provide a service, and in that service is just that. We're the ones as parents have to take that service and mature it within our children to grow them up for their future. And I think we dropped the ball. We're not holding no parents. The parents are not. We're not holding them responsible. And because of that, time has elapsed, and now we're in a rut. And now I'm hearing that the mayor is trying to take over the school board. I don't get it, but I'll throw it back to you.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate your comments. Very well said once again. It's the collective effort, like I said, of parents, of people in the city, the business community, teachers, everybody that has an interest in this is going to have to speak up. And, you know, if we don't, this thing's going to continue to spiral into this abyss. We're going to lose generations of kids. And we're never going to get the city on track in terms of a prepared labor force for the jobs of the 21st century unless we fix education in the city of Milwaukee. And I think it's job one. It can be done, but we need more people involved, not just the political class, and that seems to be who's leading this right now, but the answers can't come from them. It's going to be very difficult. If we rely on, you know, as the last few callers have indicated, if we rely on somebody else, or the letter that I read from the woman out in Los Angeles, you know, she says, this is our responsibility. This isn't the school's responsibility. They play a role in it. But we need to tell the school system what we expect from them, what we want for our kids, and what the expectations are. And get rid of a lot of this bureaucracy that exists, because those are just barriers to improvement. Those are barriers. People get discouraged when they do get involved and they meet up with this, and then, you know, they just throw their hands up in the air and they say the heck with it, and they leave for the suburbs. And, you know, next thing you know, you got a school system that doesn't have a whole lot of action or involvement from the outside. And then you see some of the problems that we have and that we're going to continue to have. It is 3:55. We're going to go to a break. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.